welcome to Asset Protection Today with attorney Bill Alexander. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong alongside the man himself, Bill Alexander. Bill, how are you doing
today?
Get
away. Jason, I'm doing great. Hope you are. Life is good. Weather's excellent. And hope folks are enjoying themselves. Life is good.
Life is good. That's what I like to hear. You know, it's about that season where you start making more frequent trips to the beach. So I know that keeps you busy as a passion of yours. So
well, we do.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of interesting things to get to today. Today's program is going to center around, you know, something that I often let the audience know that you, Bill, and your team at WG Alexander & Associates, they're there to set up documents for folks, but also to review documents in particular. I know that you often review trusts, and we want to center around what it is exactly that you're looking for when you review a trust.
Well, that's exactly right, because a lot of folks did trusts many, many years ago when the laws were different. The tax laws were very different. Folks have moved here from other states and they had a trust prepared in the other state and they don't really know whether it will work as well since they moved to North Carolina or not. It has to be said that not everybody needs a trust, although there are a lot of attorneys who will recommend a trust no matter what, just because it can make the process of moving property from one generation to the next generation or from one spouse to the other spouse easier, faster, but not necessarily cheaper. But easier and faster it is a concept that everyone likes. Frankly, it's not as important in North Carolina. And I say that because the probate system in North Carolina is not as cumbersome as it is in other states. Now, I will say it is unfortunate right now that lots of attorneys and lots of good folks are having problems at the courthouse. And it's because of a transition that's going on that started a few years ago. And it's certainly an imposition for us in Wake County and Durham County and some of the adjoining counties. And it's called e-filing. In other words, where everyone is expected to file their papers electronically. And quite frankly, I have to say that the system doesn't work very well at this point. There are lots and lots of problems with it. Folks have probably read about people being arrested that were arrested wrongly because they had done what they were supposed to, but it didn't get into the system, so the sheriff went out there and put them in jail. And of course, there are lawsuits because of that. But I can also say that the fact is that the system, the e-file system, was not designed for estates and probate. It was designed for litigation. And it wasn't designed for criminal litigation or defense. It was designed for civil litigation. Things like divorces and contract breaches and things like that. Unfortunately, it was imposed on the entire courthouse where estates, you know, probating of wills, the state administration is part of the e-filing system in those counties that it has been imposed upon. And of course, Wake and Durham counties were the earliest guinea pigs for the e-file system. And It's slowly improving, but it's and quite frankly, it is an imposition on the clerks of court as well, because they're having to learn a new system, and then they get to complain about it and then hope that it gets fixed. So there's a lot of issues there. And I didn't mean to start complaining about the e-file system, but quite frankly, I guess I should be talking to clients that don't need a trust to have a trust just to avoid the e-file system. But it's a shame because, quite frankly, the North Carolina court system is well run. I mean, it has been before e-file anyway. And so what I'm getting at is going through probate and court administration in North Carolina is not nearly as burdensome or as costly as it is in other states. You know, there are some states, I guess the famous ones would be Florida, New York, New Jersey, California. Everybody has it. If you have any property at all, you have a trust if you live in those states, because their court administration is super duper expensive and burdensome and cumbersome. And, you know, there are lots of reasons why you don't want to have to do that. And so now, one of the reasons, quite frankly, that folks should have a trust would be if you own real estate in another state outside of North Carolina, which a lot of folks do. There are a lot of folks that live in this area that own condos down at Myrtle Beach, or it may be that you inherited property or there's a legacy property in Florida or New York or Michigan or wherever. And so the fact is that one of the advantages of a trust is that you don't have to go through a court administration in multiple states. And if you have, if you own even an interest in real estate outside the state of North Carolina, then it is highly likely that a trust is a tool that you can use to save your family a lot of money and a lot of time. And it makes life simpler for them, quite frankly. So that, that's part of it that folks need to recognize. Now, there are lots of reasons for having a trust, and another reason, quite frankly, is that if you have a large estate and you're creating a legacy for your children and grandchildren, a trust is the way to go. If you have a complicated family situation, which is very, very common today, where you have folks who are in their second or third marriage and you have children by previous marriage, well, you can't do simple planning if you're trying to protect your own children in terms of receiving the inheritance that you want them to have. So again, and quite frankly, that's not an uncommon thing. You know, I've talked about how folks should always have a prenuptial agreement if it's a second marriage, and the like, and a trust goes along with it in terms of why that's important. But if you know, I'm going to talk about this morning, I'm going to talk about what I look for when I'm reviewing a trust. And quite frankly, for those folks who are interested or thinking they might be interested in having a trust as their estate, you know, how they organize their own estate plan, what I'm going to talk about is just as important to you as it is for those folks that are bringing me a trust that's been created before and they want to find out if can it be improved, or will it still work. And quite frankly, it just depends as to whether, you know, when it was done, who did it, how good were they. There are a lot of things that we're going to talk about.
Many factors that go into it. And if you have not had your documents reviewed by an elder law attorney, we highly suggest that you do that. Get a hold of the team at WG Alexander & Associates. You can go to WGALaw.com to schedule some time to speak with a professional. You can also call the office. The phone number is 919-256-7000. 919-256-7000 at WGALaw.com. You can also find information about the WG Alexander & Associates free webinars that happen the second Wednesday of every month. Next set of webinars is happening on Wednesday, June 12th. This is your opportunity to learn more about long-term care assistance for families dealing with a long-term care crisis. This is a great opportunity to get helpful information when it comes to learning more about Medicaid, VA benefits, forms of financial assistance that most middle-class families can qualify for. Go to WGALaw.com, click on the seminars button to register for free to attend. You can also find information about the afternoon webinar, which deals with asset protection and trust planning. Again, both are free to attend. All you have to do is register in advance. Go to WGALaw.com and click on the seminars button to learn more. We're taking a quick break, but we'll be back. You're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. WGALaw.com is where you can go to find more information about the elder law attorneys at WG Alexander & Associates, as well as their free webinars that happen the second Wednesday of every month. Be sure to learn more about long-term care assistance, Medicaid, VA benefits, as well as asset protection and trust planning by going to WGALaw.com and clicking on the seminars button at the top of the page. Free webinars for you to help you with some fields that can have some information that's not quite so easy to access. They help explain everything and make it easy to understand. WGALaw.com. I'm Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander, and today we're going over what Bill looks for whenever he's asked to review a trust. Bill, where should we pick up?
Well, the first thing that I ask when folks bring a trust to me is, what's in it? What property has been transferred to your trust? And frequently I get the deer in the headlights look, and they have no clue what I'm talking about. It's like, you mean we were supposed to do something other than sign this document, our magic book? And of course, it is a critical question, because if no property has been transferred into the trust, you have the worst situation possible. Because when a trust is created, your last will and testament is changed to what's called a pour-over will. And we call them pour-over wills because it says to the executor, if I have property in my estate, once you get through with all this probate and court administration, then transfer it to my trust. Well, guess what? You've just not used one of the biggest advantages of a trust, because a trust, if you funded it, that is, transferred the property to the trustee, then you have privacy. You know, it's not out there for anybody to see what property you have or what debts you have or who gets what. That's public record in a last will and testament, but it's in a trust is a private, confidential document. And of course, the fact is, if you haven't transferred your property to your trustee, guess what? you have double the expenses, or you have more expenses because you haven't done it and you haven't saved a nickel. And most of the time, the reason you've got a trust is to save money, not to spend money. Well, if you don't transfer your property to your trust, then all of your property goes through court administration just like it would if you didn't have a trust. And then you have some trust administration that has to be done after the property is transferred to the trust itself. So to me, the worst situation that people have created is when they've created a trust and then have not funded the trust by transferring their property to the trustee. Now, one of the things that's fun about a trust is that we lawyers talk about a trust like it's a bucket that you basically put all your toys in. And so you put your property into your bucket. But the fact is that a trust is not a bucket, and it's not a cart that you pull along. It's, in fact, a trust is not even capable of owning property. It's not an entity. An LLC, a corporation, they can own property, but a trust can't. So what are we talking about when we say you got to transfer property to your trust? You're transferring property to your trustee. And your trustee is holding the property in a fiduciary capacity. So the property is titled to the trustee, but it doesn't belong to the trustee. They're holding it. Now, with a revocable trust, more times than not, is you're creating a trust for yourself, and you're naming yourself as the trustee and the primary beneficiary of your trust. So guess what? If that's what you've done, revocable trust, you've transferred it from yourself to yourself as trustee. So now, once it's transferred, you're holding the property pursuant to the terms of the trust agreement that you've created. So in essence, a trust is a contract with a lot of law behind it. And so, but it's important for folks to understand that that's exactly what you're doing it. But it's real simple, and it works. And once you've transferred it to a fiduciary, you don't own it anymore as an individual, and hence you can avoid probate and court administration because you've done that. And having transferred it to your trust is what gives you the privacy from outsiders, and it gives you speed, and it should give you far less cost in terms of what a court, because you don't have any court fees or costs that are involved with court administration. So that's a good thing. Now, once I've asked that, and I will tell you this, for those folks who have not transferred property to your trust, I blame the lawyer. I don't blame the clients. And it's because the lawyers who did the trust should have stayed with you to make sure that you transferred your property. More times than not, I see a lawyer letter that says, now that you've got your trust, now you need to take the steps on your own, of course, not with our help, to transfer all your property to the trustee. And that, to me, because, you know, if you don't hold folks' hands, they really don't know how to accomplish that. And again, I blame that on the lawyers for not sticking with you to make sure that property's transferred right. And of course, sometimes it's, yeah, you transferred your property when you lived in New York, but then you came down to North Carolina and you bought your house here, and you didn't think about having the lawyer at the closing put the property in your name as trustee. So, you know, and the default is to put it in the name of the buyer as husband and wife, or if it's a single person, into that single person's name, not into the name of a trust. So, you know, all of that can be part of it, or it may be that you came down here and you had to have a mortgage. I mean, most people, when they buy a house, have a mortgage. And the fact is that when you purchase the house and borrowed money on it, you had to do it in your personal name or as husband and wife. But after you have that in place, then you can get a second deed and transfer it to yourself as trustee. And that's typically the way that works. Now, the second thing I look at, because you have to understand, most people who have a trust have a revocable trust. But the second question is the trust revocable or irrevocable? And so, like I said, the lion's share of folks who do trust planning do it with a revocable trust. And revocable trusts are easy. You know, basically you use your Social Security number for them. There's no, the Internal Revenue Service and the Department of Revenue will ignore a revocable trust. They don't even acknowledge them. Now, have you changed title? Absolutely. But it's easy because with a revocable trust, you can invest your money anyway. You can spend your money any way you want to. There's no handcuffs, no limitations whatsoever. And you can change your trust at any time. That's why they call it revocable. You can amend it. You can change it completely. And in the worst case, you can simply revoke it. But that's rare. But it's not rare for folks to change a trust because of a change in the family situation or a change in the tax laws. That's a big reason for a lot of the changes that we see.
Well, if you haven't had your documents reviewed in, I don't know, 10, 20 years, then I can almost guarantee that the tax laws have changed since then and your family situation has probably changed since then as well. So have those documents reviewed. Make sure that they are going to be executed in the way that you want to. Schedule some time to speak with an elder law attorney. You can speak with the team at WG Alexander and Associates by going to WGALaw.com. WGALaw.com. That's also where you can go if you want to register for their free webinars as well. The next set of webinars is happening on Wednesday, June 12th. Learn more about long-term care assistance, financial assistance for families dealing with a long-term care crisis. This covers Medicaid, VA benefits, all forms of government assistance that are helpful for families dealing with a long-term care crisis. They also cover trust planning and asset protection, a lot of the concepts that we're discussing in depth today. You can learn more about that for free by going to WGALaw.com and clicking on the seminars button at the top of the page. We're taking a short break, but we'll be back. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. Listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Learn more about WG Alexander and Associates by going to WGALaw.com. WGALaw.com. Find information about scheduling some time to speak with an elder law attorney or find information about their free webinars happening on Wednesday, June 12th. WGALaw.com is the place to go. I'm Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. Today we're focusing on what Bill looks for when asked to review a trust. Bill, we've gone over two key points so far. First thing you look at is, well, what's in the trust? Second thing you look at is whether or not it is a revocable trust or an irrevocable trust.
Well, absolutely. And quite frankly, in most of the revocable trusts, particularly the ones I do, that trust becomes irrevocable at some point, generally at the death of the grantor, because the bottom line is I do a lot of asset protection, and you can give your spouse asset protection with an irrevocable trust at your death. Now, some folks do that, some don't. Sometimes we do that for better tax planning, and sometimes we do our tax planning in an alternative method. But oftentimes folks are creating lifetime trusts for their children for asset protection purposes. Sometimes it's because we want to make sure that the children, the grandchildren, end up with what's left over in the trust. Oftentimes it's because we want to protect our children from a divorce or other creditor situation, or if our children are in a high-risk occupation, that we want our inheritance to always be there for them. So it's fairly common for us to do a lifetime trust for our children, and that's irrevocable. But the bottom line is that who the trustee is a big deal. If you have a good trustee in a poorly drafted trust, you're generally going to get a good result. If you have a great trust and a bad trustee, then you're going to get a bad result, because you can't substitute having a person who's a good trustee in a trust document. And I also want to know who the successor trustee is, or how would a successor be appointed if one's not named? Because that, like I said, whoever the trustee is a significant factor in the success of the trust being administered the way you intend it to be administered when you've created it. And that sort of segues into the next thing I look for. Does the trust explain the grantor's intentions in creating the trust? Now, the grantor is a name I use, but other names can be used for a trust agreement. You might see the term trustor, grantor, trust maker, settlor. Those are all terms for the person who's actually creating the trust. I just tend to use the term grantor because most people have an understanding of what that means. Much more so than the other terms that are used out there, but it all means the same thing. But it's pretty rare when I actually see the intentions of the trust creator set out in the trust document. And anytime you have a trust that becomes an irrevocable trust for your spouse or children or grandchildren, it really is important to have your intentions spelled out in the document, and it can be extremely helpful. My trusts always have the grantor's intentions placed in the trust because it can make a huge difference later on. Now, the other, going back to the trustee, when you have an irrevocable trust, most of the time you have your own spouse or child as the trustee. And when that's the case and the trust is irrevocable, then the standards of distributions are more limited than when you have an independent trustee. Because when you have a non-independent trustee, that basically means a family member. It can mean more than that. But then you're limited to what we call HIMSS standards: health, education, maintenance, and support. And those are pretty broad. So we always define those in our trust. That can be helpful as well. Because, I mean, how would you know what that means if it's not defined? So that can be an important kind of thing. Now, an independent, if you have a co-trustee who's independent, or if you have a sole trustee who's independent, or you have a distribution advisor or an independent special trustee, then distributions can be made for any appropriate reason. And I like to have that because I like flexibility in my trust. I think it makes a difference. Another thing I look for that is not that common is having a disability plan in your trust. Now, it's not important for your spouse, because hopefully you've been married a long time and you know what each other likes and dislikes and how to do get things done and those kind of things. But when you're asking one of your children to be your trustee, they don't know as much as they think they know when it comes to taking care of you. And you're basically asking someone else, generally one of your children, to spend your money on you. And you want it to be spent in a certain way. And sometimes we want our children to spend a lot of money on us, frankly, we should be able to do that. It's our money, you know. And if we want that top-notch care, using our money to do it, then, yeah. I mean, we want to give our trustee, generally a child, fiduciary obligations to spend our money on us the way we want it spent. And that's why I like having a disability section and a trust. And I've even had single clients, even my orphan clients, that they'll do a trust so that they can have a disability provision for their trust. Because for those folks, oftentimes, they're giving their money to charity when they die. They don't have somebody that would take care of them. So it's really important that they're able to set out their intentions and what they want done with their money to take care of them. So, yes, I like disability provisions in a trust. And I think that they can carry a lot of weight and make a big difference in someone's life, rather than giving somebody simply the ability to spend your money with no instructions whatsoever. And if you don't have a disability section in your trust, then what you get is somebody having the authority to spend your money, but they have no obligation to spend it the way you want it spent.
There's a lot that goes into planning, and there's a lot of maintenance as well, as you're hearing that we often need our documents reviewed as we encounter life changes, or maybe there's a big tax change coming that is going to impact you. That's why it's essential that you have your documents reviewed by an elder law attorney. If you have a trust that has been sitting around for some time and this conversation has kind of got your ears burning a little bit, go to WGALaw.com. Schedule some time to speak with an elder law attorney at WG Alexander & Associates, or you can register to attend their free webinars. Go to WGALaw.com. Click on that seminars button at the top of the page. You can register for the next set of webinars happening, which is Wednesday, June 12th. The webinars are completely free to attend. All you have to do is register in advance, learn more about long-term care, financial help that can get you through a crisis if you are in need of financial assistance, and Medicaid or VA benefits would be options for you. Signing up for the webinars would be a wonderful idea for you. There's no cost associated with it, just a wonderful educational opportunity for you. Go to WGALaw.com. We're taking a quick break, but we'll be back with more. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander, and we'll be right back after this. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Learn more about Bill and WG Alexander & Associates by going to WGALaw.com. WGALaw.com. You can schedule some time to speak with an elder law attorney. You can find information about their free webinars, learn more about long-term care assistance, as well as asset protection and trust planning by clicking on the seminars button at WGALaw.com. I'm Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. Today, we're discussing what Bill looks for whenever he's asked to review a trust, and we've gone over a lot so far, Bill, but what are the things that you have your eye on when you're reviewing a trust?
Well, another thing I look at, does the trust actually have instructions to the trustee for each death? That's really important, and oftentimes that's omitted in many of the trusts that I review, and Why is it omitted? It's simply because the attorney who drafted it expected the family to come back to the attorney to do all of the things necessary without any further explanation. Well, yes, there are lots of things that need to be done when a person dies, whether you have a trust or not. Mostly to do with the Internal Revenue Service, but the fact is their instructions, and if it's a simple trust, oftentimes a family can do most of the things necessary, and sometimes everything that's necessary, without having an attorney. Now, in the more complicated cases, even if you know what to do, a lawyer is the best way to go make sure it gets done right. But, you know, there's also other provisions that can be important in the death instructions, one of which is dealing with retirement accounts. If a trust doesn't have instructions on how to deal with retirement accounts, then you don't want to leave retirement accounts through a trust for the benefit of someone else. However, if you want to leave your retirement account through your trust, then if the trust has the proper language in it, then it's a good way to go. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you're on your third marriage and you have children and you have a large retirement account and you want to take care of your spouse, but you also want to make sure that everything that's left over goes to your children. Then leaving it to your spouse through your trust is the way to do it, so that your ultimate beneficiary, your children, can't be changed. If you simply leave it to your third spouse, then your third spouse has control over where it goes upon his or her death. And to the degree that you want to control where it goes, then using your trust, you can control it. And if you don't use your trust, it's out of your control. All right, importantly, what kind of tax plan is there? And you're basically saying, tax plan? What kind of tax plan? Is it an income tax plan? No, it's what kind of estate tax plan do you have? Because the government isn't interested in collecting taxes when property passes from one generation to the next generation. There's also what's called generation skipping tax, and that's if you want to leave property to a generation beyond your children, such as grandchildren or great-grandchildren. So the provisions in your trust about how that works, and of course, the estate tax laws are changing abruptly in 2026, and a lot of folks haven't had to worry about estate tax for the last few years, but now, because the exemptions are coming down in a big way, that there are a lot more folks that have a potential estate tax problem. And so one way is what we call a credit shelter trust, where we create an irrevocable trust for the spouse. And we have a marital trust, which what legally we call a Q-tip, for anything over and above what I call our coupon for estate tax purposes. So there's no estate tax due at the first death. Now, other folks use a simpler method that we call a disclaimer plan. But that also, for a lot of folks, requires that there be an estate tax return filed, so to just ensure that the children don't end up with a big tax bill at the second death, because the government's pretty tricky on making it easier for folks to need to pay estate tax at the second death if you don't plan correctly. And then you got to look to make sure that the way you hold title is consistent with whatever planning you have. Because I've seen lots of folks who have a very sophisticated tax plan to avoid taxes altogether, but then they don't own their property so that their tax plan works. They'll have a good trust, and a good trust plan, but then they'll have lots of property that goes to their spouse by rights of survivorship or tenants by the entirety, where the survivor gets it all or most of their property because they never changed title. And if you're going to do trust planning, you got to do it all the way, and that is to have your titles and your financial plan line up with your legal plan. And one thing I've seen over the years is that your bankers and your financial advisors never ask about your legal plan and what it looks like when they're telling you what to do. And oftentimes what they tell you is exactly contrary to what you really should have if you want your estate plan to work properly. Then, what else do I look for? What are the terms of distributions inside the trust? The biggie is it a discretionary, which I like because I like asset protection. And if you want asset protection, distributions must be discretionary. But if you say, for instance, my spouse or my child gets all the income, they shall get the income, that's not discretionary. That, and so it's not asset protected. Now, it might be what you want, but it's not asset protected. So, yes. And then you can have other things in terms of, is it an arbitrary discretionary standard, or is it a standard which the courts could say, hey, you should have distributed for health, education, maintenance, and support, and I'm going to force the trustee to do it because it was clearly intended. So this is where intentions become extremely important in terms of how things are actually administered. Another issue that is important for about half the folks out there is, do you have remarriage restrictions in there? And what is that? It basically means we have a large estate, we have children. What if your spouse, after your death, remarries and has three stepchildren? You know, are there restrictions in terms of your trust, and so that you can be assured that your trust is going to your children and not somebody else's children? So that can be pretty important.
Trust provides such a varied approach to your planning. They give you a lot of tools at your disposal. If you would like to speak with an elder law attorney, reach out to the folks at WG Alexander & Associates. Go to WGALaw.com to schedule some time to chat with a professional, or you can also find information about their free webinars. Click on the seminars button at WGALaw.com to learn more, or call 919-256-7000, 919-256-7000. A short break and back. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Thank you so much for listening today. If you have a trust that you would like to have reviewed, you can go to WGALaw.com to schedule some time to sit down with an elder law attorney. If you're interested in learning more about the free webinars dealing with long-term care assistance or asset protection and trust planning, just click on the seminars button at the top of WGALaw.com or call 919-256-7000, 919-256-7000. That is going to do it for us today. On behalf of Bill Alexander, I'm Jason Kong. Thanking you so much for listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Have a wonderful day.